One thing I've learned after all these years, you're gonna save yourself a whole lot of tears. Don't try to figure out who was wrong and who was right. Got to move along, baby. Let's ride. You got to roll with the punches. Yeah, you got to go with the flow.
Yeah, you got to roll with the punches. That's kind of a theme song for Chicago this week. Old Chicago's rolling with the punches this week. Hi, everybody, your old friend Mike Houlihan. Welcome back to Hibernian Radio. That's our 13th show. We're very proud of it, and we're glad to have you here. We're brought to you by McCann's Irish Oatmeal and Mike Haggerty Buick GMC Volkswagen over on Cicero Avenue. Thanks so much for joining us this week and every week. One of the things we like to do with this show, one of our new focuses, or focal, whatever you call it, is you're all into Irish mythology and everything, and then if you want to discover the myths growing from our own experiences here in Irish Chicago, all we have to do is look to our Irish police, firefighters, and paramedics. These are the heroes of our time, fighting in a war that never ends, risking their lives for the safety and well-being of us and our families. So that's what Hibernian Radio is all about. We're trying to uncover the oral history and stories of our mythical Irish heroes and warriors, and boy, we got one tonight. 30-year Chicago Police Department veteran, retired as a lieutenant, our old friend Terry Riley. Terry, welcome to Hibernian Radio.
So thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our distinct pleasure. Now, you come from a police family.
Yes, I do. Actually, 137 years as of this year of continuous service.
137 years of continuous service. That's amazing.
My great-great-great-grandfather started the job back in 1882.
No kidding.
Oh, 1884, sorry.
Yeah.
And served 38 years, retired in 1922. Both my mom's dad, Richard Buckley, and my dad's dad, Frank McCann, were on the job. And then my father and his five brothers were on the job.
Five brothers?
Yes.
So there were six six Rileys?
Bob,
or
Allen,
six McCanns.
McCanns, yes. Yeah. Bob, Allen, Neil, Kenny, Ray, and then a brother-in-law, Ed Martin, who married my dad's sister.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Huh. And are you, what about in your family? Just you have brothers and sisters?
I have a brother who's a fireman.
Oh, perfect.
Right. I'm the oldest of six, so I'm the only one that came on the job, but my brother did come on the fire department, and he's still serving.
So when you told your parents you were going to be a police officer, there was no pushback. They just said, oh, okay, that's cool.
Actually, my father gave me his blessings and his gun.
They'll both come in handy,
right,
I'm sure.
Right, right. Yeah, no, they didn't have any qualms about it at all. They were very excited. Although my mother has always said, growing up with her father being the police officer and then she married a police officer, she never really worried. But when her daughter came on the police department, she said she worried a lot.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So, but she was really happy the day I retired. So,
and when did you retire? How long have you been?
It'll be 3 years in May.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So just recently.
Right, yeah. And my dad was there for my retirement party, which was really nice because he did pass away like 6 months later.
No kidding.
But he did get to see
God bless
that. So it was really nice.
So you were a policewoman at a time when it wasn't that common.
Right.
You had to, you know, do a lot of trailblazing, I'm sure.
Yes. When I first came on in the 7th District, it was
Where's the 7th District?
Well, it used to be at 61st and Racine.
Okay.
So that's where I started my career. And there were more women in that district. And it was a great district. It was a fast district. My very first call out of roll call was, you know, a shooting. So.
Yeah.
And my FTO looked at me, and it was shots fired, and he looked at me, he goes, are you ready for this? And I was like, yeah, let's go.
Uh-huh.
And I absolutely loved the job. But then I went to the 8th District after my probationary period was over, and then women there were a little bit more rare. there weren't very many
women. Oh, in the 8th district, yeah.
So that was a little bit different. But after a while, you know, the guys were good, and they didn't have any problem working with me.
Yeah.
So it worked out really
well. And
really
how long before you became a detective?
I got promoted to detective in 95, so 9 years.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then I was only a detective. I was in the youth division for like 14 months, and then I got promoted to sergeant.
Oh.
And I was a sergeant for 19 years.
No kidding.
Yeah, that was like my favorite part. I did make lieutenant, and I could have stayed for 4 years, but I only stayed for one. I did that for my dad, so that... You know, he's like, oh, you could be a lieutenant standing on your head. Just do it for a year. I said, okay, I'll do it for a year. And then I retired after a year. But that was a good job, too. I did like it. But you're just in charge of a whole lot of more people. You know, the higher up you go, the more people you're in charge of.
What do you think of the history and tradition of the Irish in the Chicago Police Department?
I think it's a wonderful thing.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it paid the bills, it raised a lot of families, you know, it gave a lot of us good values, you know.
Years ago I did a show, a couple of brothers who are from Ireland, and they talked about coming to America, and one of the first pieces of advice they'd get was join the cops.
Yeah.
You get the shoes.
Right.
You get the pension.
Right.
You get the uniform.
Right.
And you stick with your own. You're with your own.
Yeah. Well, it was it was a great job for me. You know, like I said, it took care of my family for years and years and years. I mean, back since the 19th century, I guess you could say. And I was fortunate enough to take advantage of the tuition reimbursement. So I actually got a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in criminal justice.
No
that
kidding.
That
Where at?
The department's paid for at Lewis University.
Okay.
Yeah. It was really great. And 1 year for our master's, they gave us the option of going to Ireland for a 10-day trip, and we got to meet the Garda, and we had to write papers, and we had to go to school for a couple hours during the morning
in Ireland,
in Ireland at the hotel. And then the rest of the days we got to spend for ourselves. So there was a bunch of us
there?
From Lewis University that
Ten
went
days?
To Ireland. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was great. It was a lot of fun.
You know, we just had the Cork delegation here last week. They were all here for the parades, and they had 18 first responders here.
Oh, neat.
And they were having a ball.
Yeah,
you know, it's
yeah.
Because I'm sure they were welcomed with
Very
open arms
so.
In Ireland.
Very
and,
much so.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have a nice little club there in Dublin called the Garda that you can go, like our FOP hall.
Oh, okay.
Where it's, you know, like camaraderie. Like you go there and everybody there is a police officer.
Yeah.
And we were invited there. And they have little entertainment. You know, they have people that'll come in and start playing on their guitars and their borons and stuff. And it was really cool.
Cool.
We had a really good time.
Yeah. Yeah. What year was that?
That was in 19... it was either 99 or 2000. Not exactly sure.
Now, I know you and some fellow retired lady police officers went to Ireland last summer, huh?
Yes, we did. We were just there last May, and it was another grand time.
Yeah.
This time, we actually drove around through the country. We started in Dublin. We went to Kerry. We went to... Clare, County Clare.
Oh,
then
yeah,
we
that's
went
where
to
my
Dingle.
People are from, County
oh,
Clare.
Oh, okay, yeah.
To
we
Rush.
Went to a wedding there.
Oh, did you really?
At Bunratty Castle.
Oh, is that what you were going for? Somebody got married and they all decided
no,
to go?
No, we had the trip planned, and then lo and behold, one of the girl's cousins was getting married.
No
so,
kidding.
So we made that part of our trip.
Yeah.
And then we went to Dingle, and then we went to Galway, and then we drove back to Dublin.
Yeah.
So it was really fun. I've been to Ireland 6 times. I
Good
love
for
it.
You.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Yeah, I will.
Now, over the course of those 30 years, do you have one story that stands out that you will never, ever, ever forget?
Oh, on the police department?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. This program isn't long enough. There were a lot of good stories. I just worked with some phenomenal people. We made some phenomenal, you know, arrests and did some really good work. So,
do you remember Joe D? Was he Joe D. Lenardi? Was he your superintendent?
Oh, yeah.
For how many
while.
Different superintendents?
Oh goodness. You're asking a retired person.
You put that all behind you.
Well, I will say that as much as I love the job with all my heart, and all the people that I work with were so incredible, and they were such good police officers, I have to say that when it was time to retire, I was, the thing that made me walk away from it with no regrets is that I remember my grandson, who's now 16, but he was about 6 years old, and I was leaving for work one day, and he goes, "Bye, Graham." I'm like, "Bye, Danny." He said, "Be safe." I said, "Oh, I will be." And I was walking to my car. He goes, "Because if you don't come home tonight, I'll know what happened. Because sometimes bad things happen to police officers."
Oh, he said that.
Oh, so I turned around and I knelt down because he's 6 feet tall now. But at the time, he was much shorter than I am. And I put my arm around him. I said, "Oh, Danny, Grandma's going to be safe." Oh, I said, "I have lots of angels that watch over me, and I work with some really, really good people, and we take care of each other."
Oh, that's great.
And, you know, I realize, you know, it's not just about you.
So even at his age, he was aware that it was a risky
job. Yeah, so between my mom and my kids and my grandkids, you know, you don't realize as a police officer, you're out there running and gunning and having a really great time and doing your job. And you don't always think about how that affects your family members and the people that really love you.
Yeah,
but
sure.
It does.
They're scared.
Yeah. And
you
don't really
it.
Think about that. Yeah. So at that point, I was like, okay, I'm ready.
Yeah.
I can go.
And how old is he now?
He'll be 17 in June.
Oh,
yeah.
God bless him.
Yeah. So he's my oldest of four.
My grandson came over today, and he's 4 years old, and he's very into monsters. And I said, "What's the scariest monster you've ever seen?" He said, "The smelly old man." I think he's talking about me.
The smelly old man.
All right, folks, we're talking to Terry Riley, 30-year veteran of the Chicago Police Department, retired as a lieutenant, but you were a sergeant for what, 19 years?
19 years, yes.
Now, what's the difference between being a sergeant and a lieutenant? I mean, it's probably more dough, but
a little bit more dough.
Kind of
as a sergeant, you have a group of people on a watch that you are in charge of, or I did spend 10 years in gang enforcement, so I had a team.
Okay.
And so basically, I just had my guys and girls on my team and the other sergeants that were in our unit too. We worked together.
Right.
But then you get promoted and you go to, if you're a lieutenant and you're at a district, then I was in charge of the district on the midnight watch in Roseland.
Oh, wow.
So where there's just
that can be a tough area.
Tons of young, phenomenal police officers that, in spite of everything, are out there every night, you know, doing their job and pulling cars over and responding to calls and chasing people and recovering weapons. And so you're just in charge of a lot more people. There's a little bit more accountability.
Were you, when you're a lieutenant, are you like the watch commander?
Yes.
That's a, I don't know. And so there's hundreds of cops that you're working with.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And normally on the midnight shift I worked, there would be one other lieutenant and myself, and pretty much that's it, which was part of the reason I picked the midnights is because the bosses work days. Just saying. Plus, there's a lot of good police work that is being done between 10 o'clock at night and 6 o'clock in the morning.
Now, this is a tough time for police.
Mm-hmm.
There's an anti-police culture out there that I think is terrible.
Yeah.
But also, there's quite a few police officers committing suicide and having...
Yeah.
Do you have an insight on that?
Right. Well, I did go to a program last night at the Beverly Arts Center, and it is a fairly new show that's coming out, and they have two actors, one policeman and one fireman, and they do talk about their true stories and they talk about the things that happened to them on the job that caused
them
to have stress.
Is that first responders or something?
Yes, actually
it was.
I
think Alderman O'Shea has something to do with that.
He did. He was there last night for the showing. And it was
Now, these guys, actors or the actual...
The actors recreate the stories of the police and fire.
Yeah.
So, because obviously... If you're a policeman or a fireman, you might feel a little uncomfortable sitting up on a stage telling your stories. Yeah. But they tell the story, and then the actors portray their stories.
Oh, wow. So it was pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, there's always been times on the police department where the police were not liked. And, you know, part of that time was when my father was a policeman, you know, when they had... a lot of things were going on, and there were a lot of policemen getting killed. So when I grew growing up, I never thought that, you know, I was going to be considered a hero as a police officer.
Right.
Because I always knew that there was the part where the people didn't like the police, you know, where bad guys, obviously bad guys don't like the police. But there were times back in the 60s and the 70s where the sentiment is just as bad as it is nowadays.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always used to tell my guys, you know what, you're doing a noble job, you're doing God's work, you're the barrier between, you know, good and bad, and don't let it get you down.
Good advice.
Just keep on doing what you're doing, because you're phenomenal people and you're doing phenomenal work. And that's all that matters. And nowadays, I would just say, and don't read the paper and don't watch the news.
Exactly.
You know, yeah.
All right. Tough. Well, you've got great stories. Will you come back and tell us some more one of these days?
Sure, I will.
We're talking with Terry Riley, 30-year Chicago Police Department veteran, retired as a lieutenant, but 19 years as a sergeant.
Yeah, that was the best.
I got a feeling you were a tough sergeant.
It was a good time.
Yeah.
I have to admit it was a very good time.
Well, thank you, Terry.
Thanks, Mike.
Now I don't have to say safe, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Right, okay.
God bless you, and we'll have you back on the show again soon. We're going to take a little break here on Hibernian Radio. I'll be right back after these messages from our friends.
There's no friend like an old friend. Southside cousins Mike and Dick Haggerty have been selling cars for over 45 years. They've been in business together since 1982, when they started their first store, where everybody in the old neighborhood bought their cars. I go way back with the Haggertys. Mike's a Mount Carmel alum and Dick is St. Ignatius. Dick and Mike have been particularly classy to me over the years. Whenever I visit their showroom, it's old school. Buick GMC at 9301 South Cicero, or the Volkswagen store at 89th and Cicero, both in Oak Lawn. So do yourself a favor. Get to know the Haggerty family. You'll be delighted you did. I'm currently driving a used car I bought at Haggerty's. It's a gem. And when I think I got lucky, I have to tell myself, no, it's because Haggerty took good care of me. God bless him. Call him today at 708-423-5000, 708-423-5000, or go to HaggertyCars.com. Generations of Southside Irish have been happily driving Haggerty cars for generations. Visit Mike Haggerty Buick and GMC at 93rd and Cicero, and Mike Haggerty Volkswagen at 89th and Cicero. And tell them Hooley sent you. And if you're a first responder, you just might get a better deal than I did.
McCann's Irish Oatmeal. We've been warming the hearts, minds, and souls of the most discriminating oatmeal lovers for over 150 years. From the family farm to your table, enjoy the whole grain goodness of McCann's Irish Oatmeal today, available at your local grocery store.
There's only one Irish pub in the Chicago River, and that's Lizzie McNeil's at 400 North McClure Court. We spend a lot of time there, taping the Hibernian Radio Show at Lizzie McNeil's every Wednesday night. You can escape the hustle and bustle of Navy Pier and relax at Lizzie McNeil's. Our old pal John Wren is your host. Please say hello when you stop by for one of their ice-cold brews in an authentic Irish pub. One visit and you'll be calling it your hometown hangout. We've been hanging at Lizzie's for going on 10 years now, so join us. When the weather gets nice, they have two outdoor patio areas where you can take advantage of the sunshine and a cafe menu of salads, sandwiches, and appetizers. Lizzie's also has a great private party room that's perfect for birthdays, graduations, and most nights at Lizzie's you can meet the elite of Chicago's Irish-American community. So stop by Lizzie McNeil soon, right by the river, and tell them you were sent by your old pal, Hooley. Thanks. And we're back. Hibernian Radio. Hi, everybody. Thanks for sticking around. We're joining the show tonight here. Coming at you from Lizzie McNeil's 400 North McClure Court, one of our favorite spots. If you ever want to come on by and join us when we tape a show, we're here just about every Wednesday night at 6 o'clock here at Lizzie McNeil's. You know, Billy, whenever I'm walking down Western Avenue and I look in the window of Ken's or Wrong's or Hart's or any of those great saloons, I see the ghost of my old pal Jimmy Goff through the mist, and he says to me, "Hey, holy who died?" John Jack Henson, age 81, United States Navy veteran. He was a friend of mine and a good friend of everybody on the South Side. But he was the husband of the late Mary Ann and the father of John, Jennifer, Colleen, and Kate. And Kate is my old pal Rick Kogan's girlfriend. They're having the funeral and the wake Saturday out at Our Lady of the Woods Church in Orland Park. And Jack Heshen was waked, and the funeral arrangements were done by Sheehy, where all the right people go. Now I want to give a shout out to our old pal PGOD, who gives it, he's our Obit scout. He gave me, last week he gave me 11, tonight he gives me 7. Richard Godley, 84, a native of Ballymacallagat, County Kerry, Ireland, the husband of Bridget, and the father of Richie, Mary Margaret, Bernadette, and John. He's a proud member of Local 7. God rest his soul, Richard Godley. And Diane Margaret McCulley, age 60. Her nickname was Lady Di. Now, there's an interesting connection here. She was preceded in death by her beloved father, Patrick Houlihan, of County Clare, Ireland, where my family is from, Kilrush, County Clare. So God rest her soul, Diane Margaret McCulley. We're probably cousins and didn't even know it. I'm sure she was a lovely gal. She went too soon. Also, Mary Bridget Breda Mulvey, a native of Nina, County Tipperary, devoted wife of Patrick Patty, loving mother of Sheila, Tish, John, Michael, Kevin, Patrick, Geraldine, and she was a friend to many in the U.S., Ireland, and England. God rest her soul, Breda Mulvey. Also, John Martin O'Connor. He was survived by his loving wife of 60 years, Anne, and his children, Kathleen, Carrie, Michael, William, Mary Beth, Noreen, John, and his 15 grandchildren. And he was his loving cousin, Jerry Rafferty, and he's a big part of the O'Connor Barrett clans in Ireland. So say a prayer for John Martin O'Connor. Also, John Jack Needham, retired Chicago Police Department. You may know him, Eileen. Did you know Jack Needham? Husband to Agnes, a loving father to Deborah, Colleen, Catherine, Daniel, Teresa, and the late Michael. He and his mother and father are both of County Mayo, Ireland. Jack was an intelligence detective for most of 32 years. Jack Needham. And also, Jim Giblin, age 56. Wow, that's, oh, suddenly. He was the son of Dolores and late Jack Giblin. He was proud of his Irish heritage, and he loved to cheer the Cubs on at Wrigley Field. And I'm not going to make any comment about that. Jim Mahon, native of Mount Bolas, County Offaly, Ireland, beloved husband of Joan, and the father of Patricia, John, Robert, and James. He took great joy in his landscaping business of over 40 years. God rest his soul, Jim Mahon. So let's wrap that up, close up the crypt, Billy. This must be the dying season. Last week we had 11, tonight we had 7. Hey, it's 7-11. Also want to remind everybody, hey, Sunday night, my TV show, Our Irish Pub, is going to be on Channel 11 at 11 o'clock. We're all going to be gathering over at the Galway Arms starting at 10:30. Come on by, all the musicians who are in the show, including Katie Grennan, our host, will be over at the Galway Arms that night. So come on by. We'll have a beer. Also, if you're headed over to Western Avenue tonight or anytime this weekend, stop and say hello to our friends
Mary and Bernard at Barney Callahan's Irish Pub, 10618 Southwestern. It's a perfect Southside Irish pub. There's always something going on there. And tell them who Lee sent you. Also, the Irish American News for all the good news about the Irish community. And if you want to get an ad in there or anything, you can go to irishamericannews.com or give our friend Cliff Carlson a call at 847-872-0700 or email Cliff at cliff@irishamericannews.com. And one more plug for our old pal, Courtney, Mike Courtney, and his lovely wife, Dawn, who run the Twisted Shamrock Pub over at 62nd and Central. And that's a great, the great, best Irish pub in the Midway area, so check it out, the Shamrock Pub. Okay, now we're back. And we have our old friends. I don't mean old. I mean longtime friends. Eileen Guest and Jimmy Clunan. Great musicians in their own right, so welcome back to the show, you guys.
Thanks, Mike.
You want to play some tunes for us tonight?
Sure,
What do you got? Now, I heard you warming up, and I know that song. What is it?
Dirty Old Town.
That's it.
By the Pogues.
Okay.
One of our favorites.
All right. Eileen Guest, Jimmy Clunan, Dirty Old Town.
I met my love by the gasworks wall. Dreamed a dream. By the old canal, I kissed my girl by the factory wall. Dirty old town, dirty old town. Clouds are drifting across the moon. Cats are prowling on their beat. On the streets at night. Dirty old town, dirty old town. I heard a siren from the dock. Saw a train set the night on fire. I smelled the spring on the smoky wind. Dirty old town, dirty old town. Gonna make me a big sharp axe, shining steel tempered in the fire. I'll chop you down like an old dead tree. Dirty old town, dirty old town. I met my love by the gasworks wall. Dreamed a dream by the old canal. I kissed my girl by the factory wall. Dirty old town, dirty old town. Dirty old town, dirty old town.
Eileen Guest and Jimmy Clunan. That's a great tune. Ended somewhat abruptly.
It does.
Jimmy, your dad, Pat Clunan, still with us, one of the great musicians of Ireland. Squeezebox guy, right?
Correct.
Okay. Give him our best. Next time, you got to bring him down here.
You know what? I just might.
Okay.
I think it'll come out.
Okay, good. And I also want to mention that, you know, Eileen is also a 30-year veteran of the Chicago Police Department.
I am.
She was a sergeant.
Yes.
Sergeant Eileen Guest. Mm-hmm. And still working in security? Is that what you're doing at Midway?
Department of Aviation at Midway Airport, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Are you digging it? Is it fun?
It is, yeah. Airport's an exciting place.
I'll bet it
is.
Yeah,
it's fun.
But Midway's a little easier to handle than...
than O'Hare. I spent 3 months at O'Hare. It was crazy. Mm-hmm.
Oh, did you? You were there for... Yeah. Okay.
Crazy.
All right. Well, we're so glad you guys are here. You guys play together a lot. How many years have you been
this
playing
this time
together?
Of year, we do.
Yeah. Did you have a lot of gigs over St. Patrick's Day?
Yes.
Yeah.
But because of my new job, I didn't join Jimmy and Company.
Oh.
So.
Oh, you had to work.
I had to work.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
We did enough last year to make up for 10
right.
years.
Oh, okay. All right, good. Okay. Any gigs coming up you want to alert everybody about?
No.
No? Well, after they hear this show, you'll be booked all over town. Okay, what about another tune?
Sure. This is our one of my personal favorites, Fields of Athenry.
Oh, thank you. My favorite as well, The Fields of Athenry. You know why I like this song? Because my wife's name is Mary. And my name is Michael. Michael and Mary.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let it rip.
By lonely prison wall, I heard a young girl calling. Michael, they are taking you away. For you stole Trevelyan's corn, so the young might see the morn. Now prison ship lies waiting in the bay. Lo-lie the fields of Athenry, where once we watched the small free birds fly. Our love was on the wing, we had dreams and songs to sing. It's so lonely around the fields of Athenry. She watched the last star falling as the prison ship sailed out against the sky. Sure she'll wait and hope and pray for her love in Botany Bay. It's so lonely round the fields of Athenry. Fields of Athenry, where once we watched the small free birds fly. Our love was on the wing, we had dreams and songs to sing. It's so lonely round the fields of Athenry. It's so lonely round the fields of Athenry.
All right. Thank you.
The Fields of Athenry. That was lovely, Eileen and Jimmy. All right, so can you guys come back at the end of the show and play us out?
Sure will.
Okay. Folks, you're listening to Hibernian Radio. We're coming at you from Lizzie McNeil's Irish Pub, 400 North McClure Court. We're with you every week here, WSBC 1240 on your AM dial from 7 to 8. And then from 8 to 9, tune in for the Hoolies Hoolie. My sons, my twin sons, and their pal Clay O'Brien, cracking wise about the life of young Irish Americans. So we're going to take a little break here, Billy, and we'll be right back with some very special guests from County Cork. With a history going all the way back to 1896, the International Union of Operating Engineers has continued to protect workers and their families with loyalty and brotherhood. Local 150 has continued to thrive through economic booms and busts with careful training and aggressive organizing. Under the leadership of President and Business Manager Jim Sweeney, Local 150 has implemented programs and action plans to create work, protect benefits, and keep members working. And they've been helping the Irish-American community of Chicagoland for just as long. The Hibernian Radio Show is proud to be associated with Jim Sweeney and Local 150, and we salute the continuing efforts of the International Union of Operating Engineers and their support of Irish and Irish-American families now and in the future. Thanks to Local 150. When your family has suffered a loss, there's one family I know who will be there for you. Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Homes are third generation, family owned and operated. The Sheehy family has dedicated their lives serving families throughout Chicago and the southwest suburbs. The Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Home was incorporated in 1913 as a storefront at 76th and Halsted in Chicago. At the time, this was one of the few standalone funeral homes of its kind, and was to be the first of many to come bearing the Sheehy name. The founder, Roger Sheehy Sr., was soon joined in business by his three sons, Roger Jr., Jack, and Bob. This trademark of service is evident 98 years later, as Bob and Jim Sheehy, third generation, own and operate two locations in Orland Park and Burbank. At Sheehy's, the name on their sign outside the funeral home means something. For them, it's very important that everyone be treated as if they were family, friend, or neighbor, as they very well could be. When my brother Willie died a few years ago, the Sheehys took very good care of our family. And you know, you never forget something like that. Their entire staff cares about each and every family they serve. Every detail is handled in a professional and personal manner. On a daily basis, the directors Bill Kiley, Mike LaRock, and John Sullivan, and the rest of the staff take great pride in their work, serving families as if they were their own. Bob Sheehy will tell you, we pride ourselves on offering the highest level of professionalism with every family we serve. Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Homes, here for you since 1913.
Hi, everybody. Your old friend Mike Houlihan on Hibernian Radio. We're here with Patrick Murphy, the mayor of County Cork. He is visiting us with the Cork delegation. Falcha, Mayor.
Welcome to you, too. Great to be here. We're just off the plane now from Cork, and we came in from Heathrow, so we're rushing, but we got here eventually. Our flight was delayed, so we finally made it.
We're glad you're here. What I heard, it's the 20th year of the Cork-Cook County relationship.
Yeah, the 20th.
Give the man a beer.
Yeah. 20th year, yeah. It's going on a long time now. A lot of strong relationships built up, a lot of strong friendships built up, and it's great that it's continuing so fruitfully over the last 20 years. We're delighted with it.
I think it's great you brought the first responders with you as well.
Yeah, I think there's about 17 or 18 of them that are coming over. I think they came over earlier. They were over last week, I think, as far as I know. So
I interviewed some of them tonight. So it's terrific.
They have a head start on me. I'm only after arriving today. they've become acclimatized to the area so far, I think, very well. So we're only playing catch-up at the moment.
When are you going back?
Going back next Tuesday, actually. It's just flying visit.
Okay, so you have a day to rest after the parade on Sunday.
But actually, strange enough, I'm going out to one of our factories, Carberry. The Carberry Group have a plant here in Chicago.
Oh, no kidding.
So I'm visiting that on Monday, so I'm delighted about that. I suppose it shows the economic ties between the two regions as well. So you've got Carberry Group, who operate in West Cork, and they have a plant here for food flavors, actually, is what they're manufacturing here.
Pat, we're so glad you're here. Welcome to Chicago. Keep up the great work. Please keep coming back, okay?
We fully intend to come back. I had an uncle here who died, sadly, a couple of years ago, but he worked in Chicago for years and years and years in the transport company. So I've been here before, so we know all about Chicago, all right.
God bless you. We want to keep seeing you here every year. Take care.
Will do. Thank you.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Same to yourself.
Thank you,
Saturday.
Thank you.
Hi, everybody. Your old friend Mike Houlihan back. Hey, we just listened to Patrick Murphy, the mayor of Cork, and we missed putting his interview in last week, but he was here with the Cork delegation last week with 18 first responders. They were all here for the parade. The Cork delegation, he's a terrific guy. Are you aware of the mayor of Cork and all? Yeah, Patrick Murphy. He's in a wheelchair. I didn't ask him how that happened, but he gets around, God bless him. So we're here with Carmel Winters and Tora McCollum, correct?
filmmakers?
Well, she's Tama.
Tama.
Yeah. Okay, Tom with an A.
Okay. All right. And you guys have a great film that I've seen, Float Like a Butterfly. It's just, but let me tell everybody just a little bit about it before we get into it. Float Like a Butterfly is, first of all, it's playing Friday and Saturday at the Gene Siskel Film Center, part of the European Union Film Festival. I think Friday at 8.
Yep.
And Saturday at 5. I'm going to be there Saturday night with Jamila Ali, the daughter of Muhammad Ali. That should be fun. But let me tell you about the film, folks. It's from the producers of Once and Sing Street, which are both great films, comes the triumphant, rowdy, music-filled tale of a 15-year-old Irish traveler girl with hero worshippers' love for Muhammad Ali and all the fierce years to step into the ring. Oh, and her, she wants to step into the ring herself. The ostracized gypsy caravan of young Francis's clan has been stalked by tragedy and trouble from her earliest childhood, and her dad has drunk away most of the family's paltry savings. Rural Ireland is touched by social upheaval of the 60s. Old ways are chaotically giving way to the new, and Francis defies tradition that would have her soon married off to any man with the price of a bride for her dad. Making liberal use of Irish traditional music, director Winters takes her spunky heroine on an unsung, arousing, and empowering journey that doesn't spare a look at the dark side as Francis fights for the right to a self-determining future. Now, I know Barbara Sharris wrote that, and she writes great synopsises. So anyway, please welcome Carmel Winters and Toma?
That's right, Toma.
Toma?
Yeah.
Toma McCullum to the show. Welcome to Chicago, Falcha. We're so glad you guys are here.
Thank you, Carmago.
I got to tell you, that's a great film. Really terrific.
Thanks.
And what's interesting about it is the poor girl. You know, you're watching this, and there's a whole traveler culture, obviously, which is fascinating to a lot of people. There's a guy named John Connors. Do you know him? He's an actor in Ireland.
Yeah.
We did one a film last year, Cardboard Gangsters. He's become a real advocate for the traveler community and everything. But it just shows you how they were discriminated against, and this is in the 60s. And her mother is tragically killed, like basically killed, when the Garda show up and are harassing them. And then her dad goes to jail for, what, 7 or 8 years?
Yeah, exactly that.
And so she's growing up with her grandparents and her grandfather, and then her father comes back, and it's kind of scary for her. And it's funny because it's also, you know, he loves her, but he's clinging to the old ways, and it's so tough for that kid. And there's so many they go on a lot of adventures,
Glad you said he loves her, because they really love each other so much. And like I think most fathers and daughters, you know, when your little girl is born, it's,
sure,
you know, she's the apple of your eye, and she was the apple of his eye. And I think the film is just clear that the man who went into jail is not the man who came out of jail.
Yeah.
The man who came into jail had her up on his shoulders, and she really did believe him when he told her she could be the greatest.
Right.
She believed him.
Yeah.
And I think he believed himself. But once, I suppose, as you'd know, 7 or 8 years inside in jail for anybody, and then top that with being a traveller in jail at a time. Well, not even a traveller. Any man that went to jail for hitting a guard.
Yeah.
Well, you were never let forget that you stepped out of line.
Yeah.
And you're going to be put down. So I think it's just that, you know, when you're put down yourself, it can be painful to see other people kind of still living in the joy and self-belief that you once had yourself. And maybe there's also a protective parental thing, which is like you think you're kind of keeping someone in their place for their own good, you know, because I suppose it'd be for a young girl as spunky as she is. She's a real fighter. She does believe she believes she has a right to measure up to the sergeant's son and put manners on him.
She has a great line. She says, "I will not spend the rest of my life on my knees," you know.
And she got that from her granddad, because he says better die on your feet than live all your life on your knees, which is a very Irish sentiment.
Sure.
We probably wouldn't.
800 years.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
You know, there you go.
Yeah. You know, there's a very touching scene. And when the father comes back, he takes them on a journey, and they get into all kinds of trouble. And one night they're in the caravan, and they're sleeping, and she cuddles up with her dad. Mm-hmm. It just breaks your heart.
Yeah, and they're singing a really ancient Irish lullaby together. And I think, like, what you see in that scene is all they've lost.
Yeah.
And all that's possible if they can only get back together again.
Yeah.
Like, and for that to happen in a way, he has to remember who he is. A lot of people call it a coming-of-age movie, but I think, in a way, sometimes when you're young, you're very clear about who you are.
Oh, sure.
You very think clear. Yeah. And you get, well, you might get knocked sideways because, you know, life deals a couple of heavy blows. But in that case, I think there's something beautiful between them that always was there between them. And the whole film is about, well, how can they navigate this really difficult path when she's really probably ahead of him now instead of behind. She's 15.
Yeah.
She's
more savvy to the culture and everything that's going on in the world. Yeah.
She's grounded. She's got the gifts that her parents gave her, but moreover the gifts that her grandparents gave her. And she is very, very powerful. The old people are very powerful, as we know. And the old people in this film are really looking after her.
How did you get this film made?
It was a real labor of love. It took quite a bit of time. After the first film, I had a lot of support in the Irish film industry.
It was Snap.
Snap, yeah. But it was a very different type of film. It was a kind of psychological thriller.
Right.
And very, it didn't offer an audience anything like the pleasures this film does.
Yeah.
This film, I loaded up with the kind of pleasures I need as a human being right now.
Yeah.
I need color. I need life. I need singing. I need, and you know, I suppose what I want as a human being is something to offer me a bit of hope right now,
because right.
I know these are tough times for people. So this film, the fact it was set in the traveler community, that made it harder to get financed, because there had been a couple of projects that people had felt didn't go off too well, had lost money, and they were afraid.
Oh, really?
So I had to battle
in
that
films
one.
About the travelers.
Yeah, there had been a bit. They were a bit slow to fund it.
Did you see Cardboard Gangsters?
I did. Yeah, you see
that's a terrific film.
Yeah, it's really, really well done.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's much more gangland film.
Oh yeah.
I don't think you even particularly know that John Connor's character is traveler unless you happen to know it outside of the film.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm getting at?
Right.
But with this one, I wanted to really celebrate a way of life that, if we go back far enough, a lot of Irish people would have been nomadic, traveling people.
Yeah.
I firmly believe that. A lot of humans would, all over the world, you know what I mean? Before agriculture, what were we doing? We were traveling.
Yeah.
And I think nowadays we're trapped in concrete a lot of the time. And when I show this film to people, I know that there's a bit of a yen in people for the life they see on screen. Instead of seeing it as like, oh, that's poverty and backward, they see it as, oh, that's actually quite beautiful to live in the extended clan, fireside singing, you know, and very close to nature and the beautiful nature we shot in. It was just...
you're on the beach and, you know, all over the place.
And do you know what? The camp that we chose to film at, like the little spot we picked, we found out that had been a really popular traveler camp.
No kidding.
Yeah. So, in a way, our instinct, like the dog deciding where to lie down, our instinct to find a place was similar to traveler's instincts over the year. You find a good place to lie down. But, you know, it was a funny thing, because we shot outside for 25 days in Irish weather. And I was really worried, because we didn't have the budget for the kind of trailers that you see on American films.
Sure.
They have big budget films. You know, everybody has their own trailer. We had nothing like that.
And
I was worried. I was thinking, geez, Irish weather is really rough, which it was, all seasons in a day.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, God, will people get very tired? But the funny thing was, we got so used to being outside that it was really odd the one day we went inside into a house. And then we felt in a house, like travelers might have felt going into a house for the first time. We felt boxed in and strange. It was really insightful to see how quickly you adapt to the open air.
Tomo is the production designer. You created that world.
That's right, yeah.
Pretty amazing to get all that on film, because you're starting from scratch and you really got it. I mean, Where did, who built, did somebody build that caravan for you?
No, that was us finding sometimes, you know, finding in a barn, you know.
Yeah.
Going around asking everybody that we knew, do you know where one of these is? Do you know anybody who's got a this or a that? And just really having all the connections locally. That's the, all of that, the area that we shot is where we actually live.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So so finding all of those cars, finding all the horses.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll see a lot of, you'll see Carmel's nephew is the love interest, and you'll see her brothers
in
there.
Oh, he plays
there.
The guy yeah. that they're trying to marry. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the only little piece of that synopsis that I went, I'm not sure, because he's not just any guy. In fairness, her father found her a fine match.
Yeah.
Now, I actually believe there's nothing at all wrong with matchmaking once it's not coerced.
But he says to her, you don't have to marry that guy.
Yeah, he does say it. Yeah. And plus, you can see by her that she likes the look of the fella he picked.
Yeah,
he picked, like, like as his grandfather says, the match says, his grandfather says, there's not many fellas going around on the back of the finest stallion in all of Ireland. And for a young girl, this is fabulously glamorous. It's like a match to Brad Pitt, only better. Because he is going around on a fantastic coloured stallion, a piebald.
Yeah.
Well, it's a terrific film. And it won, the Toronto...
The Fipreski. It's a jury of international critics from Australia,
world, yeah.
India, Chile,
Belgium, that's terrific.
Luxembourg.
And are you guys traveling the circuit now, all the film festivals?
Not much. We're being very judicious. But Chicago impressed us enormously.
Oh, good.
what happened was, when we were invited to Chicago, we didn't. I must confess, I did not know a lot about this city.
Right.
When I mentioned it to people locally in Skibbereen, where we live,
people
went, you've got to go to Chicago. It's the, like, I didn't realize that the secret is that it's actually the best city in the U.S.
Well, that's nice to hear.
Sorry, Boston. We were in Boston a few years ago. Boston was great,
too. Did you screen the film in Boston?
We did. It was fabulous.
Okay. Yeah.
We had about 800 Irish-Americans and Americans.
Oh, that's terrific.
In the Somerville Theater. Yeah. And we were like royalty getting... we were like royalty that kind of... Well, no, it's better than royalty because people only bow and scrape to royalty. We had fabulous sharing of real human stories. We had a chap come up to us and show us pictures, an Irish traveller who's been living here for decades.
No kidding.
And he still speaks the Irish traveller language, which very few travellers at home would speak fluently.
Yeah.
He speaks it fluently, and he had pictures of his wagons and his caravans here as well.
Yeah, and that was high praise indeed, because he thought that I'd done very well with that set.
You really did?
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, he said it was completely authentic.
Yeah.
Completely.
Uh-huh. How did you pick that time period? Because you wrote this, Carmel. Why did you pick that time period?
You see, 1972 was when Muhammad Ali came to Ireland. And when he came to Ireland, it was like, it was better than Elvis Presley.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he was the king of Ireland.
Sure.
He represented the classic, you know, underdog made good, the champion of the underdog.
Yeah.
So he had a real message, I think, for Ireland as a colonized country. There was just a massive love for him. So I thought that was interesting, because in Ireland, as we know, you know, it's still fairly... The kind of attitude to travellers would be very similar to the English attitude to Irish people, you know, long ago.
Right.
So I felt, well, now if I kind of compare this, if I hang Muhammad Ali, like not hang him now, sorry, that was a very poor...
No, that was the poster, the poster there.
If we kind of conjure Muhammad Ali as an image of justice...
Yeah.
And then you kind of have a young traveller girl who aspires to everything he represents. It kind of puts us up to us to open our hearts to what she might be going through.
Yeah.
And it has done that. When we screened in Cork, we had a big audience of travellers and settled people together.
Yeah. Oh,
and,
yeah.
And it was very loving between us all. And I don't mean this in a kind of sentimental, silly way. I mean, a lot happened at that screening in Ireland. A lot happened to bring about some healing.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of healing to do. But I think, like, travellers, I thought by setting it in 1972, I could still celebrate a lot of the travelling culture that I think the state fairly liquidated around that time. But it was still intact enough to see, something incredibly rich was lost. There are travellers today still working very hard to hold on to remnants of that life. Right. But it has largely passed. And 72 was when it was just the cusp of that. You see, the second camp we go to where the culture's in trouble. The second traveller camp that the family travel to, you can see the culture in trouble. And that's represented through things like domestic violence. They're all kind of symptomatic. They don't come about just of themselves.
There's a very funny scene when they, and it's tragic at the same time, when they go to visit, I think it's his cousin, and he has a house mm-hmm. and a wife.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, the father just gets blitzed.
Yeah, yeah.
And he says, well, we're going to go stay in a hotel. I mean, he's just lying, and the daughter calls him out on it. And it's terrific because they're like ducks out of water there.
I really feel sorry for him because, you know, he comes out of jail, he's a pure fish out of water.
It's yeah.
Awful thing to come out of jail after that amount of time. And then to have to kind of, not a bob to your name, not a single bob to your name.
Yeah.
And even your wagon has been taken from you.
And they shot his horse.
Yeah, shot his horse and his dog.
Yeah.
And like for a very proud Irish man, an Irish traveller man, to have to accept charity then from your in-laws, and then, and also from settled people, because Uncle Bobby, his wife's brother, is married to a settled woman.
Yeah.
And he's so ashamed to be seen in this light, because obviously, you know, usually when things are going well, actually he's from a family that are very proud and, you know, don't have to look for alms or charity. So he's sitting there just stewing in his own mortification. And when he tries to kind of lie to cover up his daughter, because he's been very unfair to her before, she decides, no, I'm going to hang you out to dry now.
Yeah, she does.
But you remember, as Irish people, you were always trained as a child to never contradict your parents.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
Never. And she dares to go when he's saying, oh, sure, we have a hotel booked for tonight, when they're being offered a bed.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, sure, we have a hotel booked. And she's like, what hotel? If that was our family, you'd get a good clip across the ear.
And that's when he slaps her and she punches him and knocks him out.
You're giving too much away now.
Okay, you're right.
Yeah,
I am.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
you got to go see it.
Yeah, exactly.
Get over to the Siskel Film Center Friday night at 8, Saturday at 5. You'll get to meet Carmel and Toma. And you will enjoy the hell out of the movie, I can guarantee it. So glad you guys are here. Welcome
to
Chicago, Falcha. And we'll see you at the movies
at
the Siskel Film Center. Okay, we're going to take one more break here on the show, and then we'll be back with Jimmy and Eileen to play us out. Thanks.
McCann's Irish Oatmeal. We've been warming the hearts, minds, and souls of the most discriminating oatmeal lovers for over 150 years. From the family farm to your table, enjoy the whole grain goodness of McCann's Irish Oatmeal today, available at your local grocery store.
There's no friend like an old friend. Southside Cousins Mike and Dick Haggerty have been selling cars for over 45 years. They've been in business together since 1982, when they started their first store, where everybody in the old neighborhood bought their cars. I go way back with the Haggertys. Mike's a Mount Carmel alum and Dick is St. Ignatius. Dick and Mike have been particularly classy to me over the years. Whenever I visit their showroom, it's old school. Buick GMC at 9301 South Cicero, or the Volkswagen store at 89th and Cicero, both in Oak Lawn. So do yourself a favor. Get to know the Haggerty family. You'll be delighted you did. I'm currently driving a used car I bought at Haggerty's. It's a gem. And when I think I got lucky, I have to tell myself, no, it's because Haggerty took good care of me. God bless him. Call him today at 708-423-5000, 708-423-5000, or go to HaggertyCars.com. Generations of Southside Irish have been happily driving Haggerty cars for generations. Visit Mike Haggerty Buick and GMC at 93rd and Cicero, and Mike Haggerty Volkswagen at 89th and Cicero. And tell them Hooley sent you. And if you're a first responder, you just might get a better deal than I did. Thanks so much for joining us here on Hibernian Radio. Our old friends Jimmy Clunan and Eileen Guest are going to take us out with some great music, a couple of reels. We'll see you next week, and God bless you all. Thanks for listening.
One, two, three.